Welcome back, everyone, to the Language and Behavior Podcast. This week, we have a special episode as Charlie Peck has a brand new rebranded podcast called Thriving Under Pressure, and I had the pleasure of being the first guest for her new show. So take a listen to our conversation as we talk about working under tough situations, leadership strategies, and how to help our mental health when we feel like our battery is just uncharged. Make sure if you are enjoying this conversation that you head over to Charlie's podcast and pressing that subscribe button. I promise you're going to gain a ton of important information, insights, and wisdom to help you in your educational journey.
Welcome to Thriving Under Pressure. This is a show about mastering self-control in high demand environments. And Josh Stamper is our first guest. So Josh, we have an interesting way of like getting together here. This is really odd for me to introduce you because usually we do this together. So when you guys are listening to Josh, just remember he's got this extensive background as a leader in a very high demand industry, and that is in education. So Josh, I'm going to throw it to you. Give us a little background on that pressure environment that you're in and where you are now.
Yeah. So thank you so much for allowing me to be the first guest with the new show that you've got going on. So yeah, I was in education for almost 20 years. And within that time, half of it was as an assistant principal in a very intense area. It was in the city of Dallas, and, you know, in North Dallas specifically, there were a lot of changes in that area due to Louisiana hurricanes and people moving into that space. The economics changed drastically too. And so with that, a lot of educators in that area, specifically at my school, were noticing a shift in just the needs of the students, needs of the community, and were having a really tough time with that because that wasn't their experience. They were used to an affluent area where it turned into a Title I school. And so me being a teacher then moved into administration, I also had kind of a culture shock because I prior to was in a very wealthy community, a very affluent community that really didn't have a lot of needs. There wasn't a lot of student behavior. There wasn't a lot of issues with like parents. And so going to that new school, it turned into a high pressure situation very quickly. And it was a huge learning experience for myself. I learned on the job, a lot of failure, a lot of unbalance of work life versus family life. And so there were some things that had to be shifted and changed after several years of pretty much burning out and understanding that the way that I was doing things was just not healthy for myself. It wasn't healthy for my family. And it was definitely wasn't healthy for the people I was serving.
All right. So we've got to do an application here of what you learned there and what the biggest takeaway was that translates directly to leading adults in any high pressure industry. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah. So there's a ton there. I mean, obviously there was a culture that was pretty toxic when I got there. And so for myself, being brand new, not only to the position, but new to the campus, one thing I would say is that when you're going into a new organization, regardless if it's an education or business, there are going to be things put on you and expectations and ideas of your position that it's really hard not to take on yourself. And so that's what I did when I got there. I mean, they wanted me to be the sheriff. They wanted me to be the bad guy. They wanted me to, you know, lay down the law and make a change, but in a very punitive way when I was there. And so that was really difficult to take on because that's not who I am. That's not my values. That's not how I wanted to respond to student behavior. But also it wasn't how I wanted to interact with my peers or my colleagues. And that's really what they wanted. They wanted anyone that did anything wrong to receive essentially the maximum punishment for that, regardless if it was an adult or a child. And so to try to live up to that expectation was really hard for me because I felt like I was living a fake life. I wasn't myself. And that was not sustainable. So that was something where I had to learn through that. And I felt like a failure because I wasn't living up to their expectation. But the reason I was failing at it was because it wasn't truly who I was as an individual. So about halfway through the year, I decided I really don't care what other people think. I'm just going to do what I know is right and who I truly am as a leader. And that's when I got some confidence to make that shift, because otherwise I was just going to make everyone upset, which it seemed like I was. Nobody was happy with any decision I was making.
Well, that's really hard because there's so much pressure on you then. And so, I mean, I wonder how many people are walking through life just feeling that load, that heavy load, and not really functioning at their best and the way that they'd really like to be, you know?
Yeah, the other thing too, I was also taking on my job as my identity. And so I was working insane hours. I was working, 70, 80 hours a week, as, getting there super early, but also staying crazy late. And so just the stamina piece in that, I had to make sure that I was putting some boundaries in place because I was working myself to the bone, and I wasn't healthy. I wasn't eating correctly. I wasn't getting good sleep. I was constantly working, even when I was home, even working like on campus for that long. I'd still go home. I'd still check my email. I'd still respond. I was responding at 10, 11, 12 at night to emails. And what was occurring was I was actually showing really unhealthy model for other people. I wasn't saying it with like my verbiage and my words, but I was modeling what I expected from other people. And really, that's not what I was intending, but teachers saw that. They saw that I was still working crazy hours at night, and I was responding. I wasn't like scheduling it out in the morning, which I probably should have done, but instead I was just sending it right then. So I think also I know like the work-life balance is something that's not obtainable, but at the same point, I think there does need to be some boundaries in regards to how you operate, not only in your business or on your job, but also like how much you're putting in. Because if you look at it, I was probably wasting more time than needed, and the things that I was thinking was important really weren't that important for me to stay at the job site.
Okay, so give an example of that because people are listening and they're thinking, I have so much to do. Everything seems so important. There's nothing I can possibly give up. What did you find that you could give up or prioritize in a different way?
Yeah, I think most of it was things that were clerical. I wasn't intentional about understanding when during the day that I should be scheduling that out. So one, I was very disorganized when I first started as a leader. So I had to put things in place, right? So thankfully I had a secretary. So, using her and meeting with her as far as, okay, I need these blocks of time in my schedule where I put something on my door. I'm going to shut my door. I'm going to work on these things during the school day, versus, working on that at 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 7 p.m. at night, when that is something that really there's some probably wasted time in there during the school day that I could be taking advantage of that. The other thing too with emails, at one point I stopped doing email at all at home, so I took the app off my phone. I've written it down, and actually I do this in Keynote, Charlie, is I talk about how email's the devil, because if you're controlled by it, you could literally spend your entire day in your office just dealing with the emails. I remember plenty of times of going into a classroom, doing an observation, coming back, and I had 100 emails sitting just in that time that I did that observation, where I was getting just consistent communication. And so I could, if I wanted to, just stay in my office all day, just responding to emails. And that's not healthy. That's not what a good leader should be doing, right? And so I had to have some things where I said, nope, this is a boundary that once I leave campus, I'm not going to check email. And I've had some pushback. I had pushback from my district leaders of, I sent you an email, you didn't respond to me. But it's like, okay, well, what's the district communication guidelines there? Well, it's 24 hours from when I get the email. So if you sent that to me at 4 p.m., well, I have 24 hours to then respond. But in conversation, that wasn't the expectation. So they're pushing you beyond the guidelines that were established by the district. And so just knowing what those are, right, for your organization or for your school district. And so I would push back, right? I'm at home. When I'm home now, my role is father and husband. And so I don't need to be checking email. Now, if it's an emergency, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to get a phone call. I'm going to get a text. So I can think of plenty of examples where, hey, one of your students is missing and the parents are frantic, they're trying to find their child. And so they gave me a call, the district called me. And what did I do? I stopped everything at home, and I assisted in that. And thankfully, we found that child. But that was a specific and individual example that doesn't happen every night. So a lot of times, too, the email I get sent at 9 o'clock at night is going to be the first person at your office when you come in at 6:30 or 7 in the morning, right? And so a lot of those emails that are being sent to you are things that you've already taken care of. And so now you're just wasting time. It's inefficient. And so I would just not be a slave to email.
I like that because it can. That's one of the biggest things that I hear when people talk about work and the pressure and demands of whichever role they're in. It's the emails. And so what they try to do is they try not to do their emails at night at home or on the weekends. They're like, I'm not doing any work. But then they get to work Monday morning and their emails just flood their laptop or computer or whatever, and they can't handle it. So there is that. But I also wonder what we can do instead of emails. Like, what is the better way to communicate? Because I hate sending emails to people sometimes because I know that I'm just another email to them. What's a better way to do it? Is there?
For sure. And just in leadership in general, I think it's communication is such a key component of success. And so for myself, I would rather have a one-on-one conversation with a person, like literally face to face versus in an email. Emails have so many times, and this is to parents, to staff members, can be misconstrued based on the language that they perceive. And so something that could be very, and I'll give you an example, Charlie. I'd quickly send off an email on my phone while I'm walking through the hallways because I'm going from one place to another and be like, hey, when you get a chance, come see me. Well, what do they think of? They think of the negative. So they're running down to my office thinking, am I fired? No.
That's
You know, it
the
was a simple
worst.
question. And I was just quickly trying to, shoot off an email to them. But unfortunately, they perceived that email as a negative, and that was not how it was intended. But if I just went to their classroom and had that conversation, I mean, that solves so many issues just by doing that. And that was something I also had to build in. And so for myself, I did relationship walks. I had a spreadsheet. I know that's a dirty word for some people, but I had a spreadsheet to understand, like, have I had a one-on-one conversation with on my staff? I had a staff of 100, but sometimes I wouldn't see one staff member for months and months and months if I wasn't intentional about making the time to go. And that was more about just understanding what was going on in their world and letting them know that I cared as a leader about them as an individual versus the product that they're producing. Because I think sometimes that's how it feels. Like, I'm just a number. I'm just here to produce for the organization. And you want them to understand, no, I'm here for you. Is there any resources do you need? Do you need anything else? I found out so many different things during those relationship walks that I would never no, because I didn't give them a space to communicate that. So for instance, they're going through a nasty divorce, or their significant other lost their job. I mean, I can think of so many examples of things that I found out that I would never have known based on the smile on their face and the way that they did their job and how productive they were in the classroom. But because I took 5 minutes just to have a one-on-one conversation, they felt comfortable enough and they understood, like, okay, this person, this leader, values me as a human being versus I'm just someone that's, trying to get content to the students. That's when they started to open up and I started to find out a lot more about my staff members.
Yeah, that is really big because now you've humanized everybody and you humanized your role. So there's so many times where the people that we work with or lead, they don't see you as that person. And so I think that's a great shift because it does bring that culture together and that can work anywhere. So here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering when we go into these new environments, is there something that you do to establish that so that you can get organized ahead of time? Like if somebody's a newer leader, what should they do so that they don't miss that? Does that make sense? Like we've got to make sure we get organized first. You said you were disorganized. How do we do
Well,
that from the get-go?
yeah. So the hard part is I had a superintendent that was brand new. He was from Florida. He came into Texas and it was a culture shock, as you can imagine. And his first thing was, you need to understand why the fence was built before you knock it down. And I always took that to heart because there were a lot of campuses that I was new to, and even I switched districts. And so it does take some time to understand the procedures and the things that are in place and why. But I also think as a new leader, it's okay to ask those questions. I think sometimes we're like, oh, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to make a decision until I understand why these things are put in place. And I do think that's true. But at the same point, I would ask that you push back a little bit because sometimes things are just tradition. They're just legacy pieces that have been there for a long period of time that no one's really thought about. Is this still something that's beneficial to the whole school or whole organization? And so I enjoyed being that person to be like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Big,
Yes.
where he's in there and he keeps asking the question, why? Or I
Yes.
don't understand, I don't get it, you know, and I was kind of that person. And that can be uncomfortable sometimes, but I think it is important to have that, because if you don't, then it's just us going through the same routines. And so I think organization is hard at first because you don't know what's the closest alligator to the boat. You don't know what's the most important thing that you have to get done on that day until you live it. And so it may take you about a year to understand, okay, I thought I had to stay till 6, 7, 8, 9 at night to get this done. But really, in fact, that's not the most important thing I need to get done. So I can push that down the road a little bit and, you know, work on something more important. Or maybe I can just go home and enjoy my family, you know. And so, you know, it took me some time to understand as far as the role and responsibilities. And because every school's different, every district's different. So some things are more important in that organization than others. So the organization piece, I do think if you're intentional about it and understanding, okay, what is the most important thing? What do I need to get done on that day? And then also for myself, you know, I had a board in my office. And so there were a couple of things I put on there every single day. There were things that I put on there that I had to do. So the relationship walks was something that I had to do every day because the reason I became an administrator was to have the most impact with my staff and with my students. But some days I had meetings all day. I got stuck in my office, and those days I felt horrible. Why? Because I didn't make any connections with anyone outside of the people, although very few people. And typically, if I'm in a meeting in my office, it's probably not for a good reason. It's probably something that's very uncomfortable, something that's a crucial conversation, or something that, you know, a large student behavior that requires, you know, police or someone else from the district, that is involved. And so you go home that day and you just feel gross, right? So I always had goals on my board of like, these are my touch points every single day that I need to have as a leader. And so it may be different for obviously for different people. And then the other thing was I had a list of things of like, what is the most important thing? Like I said before, the closest alligator to the boat. What's the one thing I have to get done today? No, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And then I had the list as far as importance, you know, 1 through 10 or whatever it was. And I just kind of went through that every single morning. I established that. And then as I was crossing things off the next morning, erase those and I'd start over. Right. And so that was something I needed visually to understand, like I had to get those done. Now, as an administrator, just understand that if you build a checklist, most likely that list is going to go out the door within the first hour of the day because something crazy is going to occur, especially in a intense environment like I was talking about. But at least you have that so you understand, you know, the most important things that you need to get done in regards to organization.
Well, that's a good visual too. It's good to have the visual. And so here's what I'm wondering. So we've got the book. So for people who don't know this, Josh and I
Yeah.
wrote a book called The Language of Behavior. Yes, yep, there you go. If you're looking, it's right behind him. If you're just listening, then it's like posted everywhere. If you look at a screen, we even have a mug. It's awesome. And right. And so the language of behavior is about understanding what is going on with the actions that we get uncomfortable with. And so we can look at that if we're working with kids, what's going on with kids and their behaviors, or if we're working on, we're leading other adults, what's going on with their behaviors. But really, what I love about this conversation, Josh, is that you looked within yourself, and then we're having strategies to model that for the people that we lead. And I think that's super important. You do this in your keynotes and the work that you and I do together with districts and organizations when we're trying to help develop their groups. We communicate that to them. It's about how do you learn it so that you can lead it with other people and model it. So I love that. And then, so the last piece here that we'll wrap up with is the conversation piece. So going back to the email or the way to communicate, which I keep hearing from you is so important, is we use Voxer. And that's just one way to do it. But
Yep.
I feel like with the groups that we work with, Voxer is a really quick, easy way. So what do you think about it? And you and I use it all the time, of course.
Yeah, I actually used it as administrator. And then I also used, I mean, I gave my staff my cell phone. I know like some people are really against that, but I found too, I could do voice messages through that. And the reason I like Voxer so much is because you can pick up on tone of voice. You can pick up on that where, like I said before, email. You don't get tone. So you really do have a hard time sometimes interpreting the message. And so, you know, I use Voxer all the time. I call myself a Voxer head because it's just consistent every day, not only with you, but a lot of other educators. And then we also, the reason I found it through through the staff was because other schools were using it as a walkie-talkie for administrators. So they just built a group for themselves so that they can communicate that way. So there's a lot of ways to do it, but I'd even challenge people, if you're a leader, instead of doing a newsletter to the staff, just videotape yourself, post the video in an email, and that way they can see the inflection, they can see your face, they can see the body language, because so many things that are missing in an email is it's the nonverbal, and it's so powerful for po folks. And I used to teach my students this whole time. You could say one thing, but your tone of voice, the way that you say it, as far as volume, how your posture is, are you looking down, your facial expressions. I mean, there's so many other things that we pick up, and the nonverbals, I think, is like what, 70% of communication. So when you take that out and you're relying on the 30%, that's really, really, really difficult for an individual to take in and interpret.
Yeah, it is. And there's so much to it, but the solutions can be tangible and they're not for everybody. So every single thing that we mention here is not going to work for every person. I know there will be limitations, pushbacks, and like good solid reasons why people can't do certain things. But that's what we need to do is just try new things, try little different things, or just think a little differently about it. And I think we can truly thrive under pressure when it gets very demanding. And we're just trying to enjoy this life. Really,
Oh my
professionally and
gosh,
personally.
yes. Well, and then also, I'll just say this. I know we're wrapping up, Charlie, but just find also some small things throughout your day that are going to be highlights, because we are going to go through some really difficult times and things. I have so many stories, Charlie, that we don't have time for that were just insane. Things that I never thought I'd experience as an administrator. And on those tough days, what are you doing for yourself? Because, burnout is real, and, chronic stress is real, and the way it affects your body, so what are you doing after you are done with work that's going to help your mental health, help yourself as an individual, that you can then go back the next day more refreshed than coming in feeling completely depleted?
Yeah. As a therapist, I like to end my sessions with, "What are you looking forward to?" And that's always to give hope. And I like when people go back home and make it a family affair. It doesn't have to be over the dinner table, but it could be if you get together for dinner or whatever you do. That way, you focus on the highlight. So I like that you said that. Couple of highlights that you bring back to your family. And it's a simple, easy way to connect, but also to end your day and then go into the evening for a more restful sleep, if you can focus on the highlight and then share with each other. So there's lots of little ways to do it. And I think that's how we have to do it, is the little pieces of it, so it doesn't feel so big.
Yeah, and we talk about like most days, for our teachers, like 90, 95, 98% of the kids are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But it's just that small percentage that may really shift your mindset or your interpretation of how everything's going. And same thing with leaders, right? I mean, if we have that tough parent conversation and they just tear into you, well, that was maybe 15 minutes of your day. But that's the one thing we're focused on as, oh, my day was terrible, But the other 8, 9 hours that you're on campus, everything went smoothly, everything went wonderfully. But that's the one thing that we're focused on. And so I love what you're saying. What are those highlights? What are the things that are going on? And then also your perspective of like, you know what? The grand scheme of things, the day was pretty good.
That's right. And that is just more enjoyable to look at life that way. So I'm glad that you do. Yes. And so we also have to tell people that you wrote a book called Aspire to Lead, and there's
Yes.
great information in there too. And you do a keynote with that, and you just have your own unique perspective that you can talk to anybody about, no matter what kind of leadership role they're in and whatever industry that is. So how can people connect with you?
Yeah, of course. So I have my own website, so joshstamper.com, on the social media platforms. Typically, it's either my name or Joshua double underscore Stamper. And so you can, connect with me there. And yeah, Aspire to Lead is definitely a framework that was constructed for anyone. And Charlie, my editor actually said that, and I was surprised because initially, I was thinking education only, but that was amazing feedback from her to let me know that that framework could be used for anyone, regardless of their profession.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Josh. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.